Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we open our show with some major national news stories from Public News Service, including growing controversy over a memo that congressional Republicans want released to the public that the FBI warns could compromise national security. After the national news headlines, we'll tell you about a gubernatorial debate coming up right here in San Diego with all four of the leading Democratic contenders running for governor. Here in East County, we have a smoking hot story about legal action challenging El Cajon's stringent new marijuana ordinance. The flu has killed hundreds of people locally this season so far, including a 10-year-old boy. We'll have details on how you can protect yourself from the flu on today's show. San Diego State University has a new president, the first woman to head up the campus on a permanent basis. On Crime Beat, hear about a local prostitution sting and why San Diego's district attorney calls this operation a wake-up call for Johns. We'll have a safety message for Super Bowl fans from the El Cajon Police Department. And then on Green Scene, you may be surprised to learn which East County communities have the highest ozone pollution levels. Plus, hear about a landmark settlement with utility companies announced by Citizens Oversight that will save ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars on the shutdown costs from the San Onofre nuclear plant. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Mandy Matty from No One Left Behind. That's a group helping interpreters who aided our military resettle here in our region. She'll be sharing news about a local interpreter who saved a neighbor's baby during a fire that destroyed his own family's household, and how you can help this local hero. Then on Destination East County, hear about some cool events coming up across our region, from Valentine's dinners and concerts to a St. Patrick's 5K run and Green Mile. Learn where you can get free help to prepare your income taxes. And finally, hear about a medical breakthrough for treating wildlife burned in California wildfires. We'll have all these stories today, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, February the 2nd, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Today could be the day the much-talked-about GOP secret memo is released. That despite continuing objections from the DOJ and the FBI. We take a look at sex trafficking at the Super Bowl. Is it a myth? And a Texas program aims to make communities healthier. Now our top story, the Washington Post quoting an unnamed presidential advisor as saying, "There was never any hesitation. The president was resolved on this. He was not going to be persuaded otherwise. He wanted it out." At issue is the memo written by Devin Nunes and his staff, which was first seen by President Trump on Wednesday afternoon. The Post says that General Kelly, the chief of staff, offered his opinion to Trump that releasing the memo would not risk national security, but that the document was not as compelling as some of its advocates had promised Trump. Both the DOJ and FBI are on record objecting to the planned release. It's being called a surprise victory for voting rights advocates. A federal judge has ruled that Florida's current system for restoring voting rights to people after their release from prison is unconstitutional.
U.S. District Judge Mark Walker said the process used by Florida's Board of Executive Clemency to decide how a person can get their voting rights restored violates the Constitution, both the First and 14th Amendments. John Sherman with the Fair Elections Legal Network challenged the Florida process. He says the court agreed the state doesn't have the right to disenfranchise or deny voting rights in these cases.
What it did hold is the means by which former felons are forced to jump through hurdles and beg the Executive Clemency Board, the governor, the attorney general for their rights, that process is unconstitutional.
The rule doesn't immediately restore voting rights to people who have been incarcerated for felonies. Judge Walker ordered further briefing from all parties in the case to determine the appropriate remedy. I'm Tramell Gomes.
More than 1.5 million Floridians are unable to vote due to the state policy of permanently disenfranchising people convicted of a felony. Meantime, Eric Tegenoff is here to tell us big money dominated the 2016 elections in Oregon. That's according to a new report.
The Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG, found about 720 individuals and businesses contributing $5,000 or more collectively donated nearly $35 million to candidates and ballot measure campaigns. In contrast, more than 31,000 people who gave $250 or less donated $2.5 million. That means large donors outspent their smaller counterparts 14-1. State Representative Diego Hernandez says he has experienced the effect large donors have on elections. He says when he decided to run, he thought he could focus on the issues and voters.
But it turned out that a lot of my time had to be spent also fundraising, which is time taken away from having to go door-to-door, talking to constituents. And so it definitely is something that impacts the election process.
The report also found large out-of-state donors outspent small in-state donors 10-1. Hernandez says these imbalances end up hurting candidates of color and women who run for office, since they typically don't have a network of wealthy donors at their disposal.
And as you prepare to watch the Super Bowl this weekend, you may not know that the game has commonly been regarded as the single largest human trafficking incident in the country. Mary Sherman tells us that claim is now up for debate.
As a sex trafficking survivor, Teresa Flores founded the SOAP Project. It stands for Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. She explains the answer might be found online, where most sex trafficking business occurs.
Numbers don't lie, and if you go on and check it, you'll see it for yourself that they advertise Super Bowl special or football fan. So it's very much driven by the event.
With a big game in Minneapolis this year, the Women's Foundation in Minnesota commissioned research on the matter. Co-chair of the Super Bowl Anti-Sex Trafficking Committee, Terry Williams, explains they discovered that while there is an uptick in trafficking in a host city, it is no more than any other major public event.
Using that, we really brought our advocates together and law enforcement and all of those folks to say, all right, we know this is an issue 365 days a year. What is our response going to be leading up to and then beyond?
The foundation is also developing a model of their human trafficking awareness efforts to be used for future events and shared with other cities. And finally, Mark Richardson reports some community clinics in Central and Southeast Texas being asked to improve health, not just health care, in their areas.
A new grant program aims to help the clinics address the underlying conditions in their communities that cause health problems. The grants from the Episcopal Health Foundation total $10 million. Lexi Nolan with the foundation says the Texas Community-Centered Health Home Initiative will focus on eliminating the root causes of chronic conditions and poor health.
A lot of our clinics are focused on issues related to overweight, food insecurity, active living. We have a clinic that's focused on adverse childhood events. So there's a range of issues, but these are common problems in lots of communities.
She says the four-year program is investing between $160,000 and $500,000 in each of 13 urban and suburban clinics. To develop programs that improve both individual patients' health and entire neighborhoods, the clinics will partner with community groups, government agencies, schools, and businesses.
Under the initiative, each clinic creates and implements an action plan tailored to its community, with the foundation providing training and technical assistance. That's our news for now. Have a great weekend. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The San Diego County Democratic Party will host its first ever gubernatorial debate on Thursday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Jacobs Center in San Diego. All four leading Democrats running for governor of California have confirmed that they will participate in the debate. The candidates are Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, former Los Angeles Mayor Antonia Villaraigosa, former Superintendent of Public Instruction Delaine Easton, and State Treasurer John Chiang. The event takes place on the eve of the California Democratic Party Convention here in San Diego, when the party delegates will vote on endorsing in the governor's race. For tickets to the debate, you can visit sddemocrats.org/debate or call 858-277-3367. If you have a question you'd like to submit for the candidates running for governor, you can email your question to info@sddemocrats.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jillian Heimer.
When California voters approved Proposition 64, legalizing the recreational use and cultivation of marijuana, voters also approved a less publicized part of the proposition, which allows individual cities and counties to regulate where it can be bought and cultivated. A group of unnamed citizens calling themselves El Cajon Residents for Responsible Governance in December filed a writ of mandate with the San Diego Superior Court, requesting an immediate stay of El Cajon's stringent new ordinance banning marijuana sales and commercial cultivation. The writ claims that the ordinance approved unanimously by the City Council in October is punitive and illegal. While the City of El Cajon has welcomed several new large businesses and car dealerships in the past several years, it has never been a pot-friendly zone for marijuana dispensaries. Dispensaries have been banned since October 2010. However, the city toughens its stance in January 2016 when the council voted to also prohibit commercial marijuana cultivation, distribution, delivery, storage, and manufacturing of marijuana products. The writ filed by La Jolla attorney James Finnegan specifically cites the El Cajon City Council's unanimous vote on October 10, 2017 to hike up fines on pot dispensaries to $2,500 per day per violation. Previously, fines ranged from $300 to $500 a day. Finnegan says he believes that El Cajon has the most restrictive regulatory scheme in that it completely bans any commercial activity. El Cajon would also be the most punitive in that they made it a misdemeanor to violate their municipality's zoning laws, he adds. He says that reasonable regulations would be fair, such as requiring minimum distances from schools, churches, or drug rehab facilities. The city could also limit the total number of licenses and impose a permit or license fee, Finnegan suggests. The group of unnamed individuals behind the legal actions has filed paperwork as a mutual benefit nonprofit that works for the betterment of a select group of members, not the public. Finnegan refused to identify individual members, claiming they fear intimidation. He says that fear of intimidation is why they didn't offer comments at the city council hearing last October. Although Finnegan says he is confident that he will prevail in the case, San Diego attorney Michael Sindrich has a different view. Sindrich started his law career with the San Diego County District Attorney Office as a prosecutor and is now a criminal defense attorney specializing in marijuana law cases. He says the biggest stumbling block in Finnegan's case is that Proposition 64 clearly has a provision that allows local governments to enforce state laws and regulations for non-medical marijuana businesses and enact additional local requirements. Sindrich states, "I believe that when people voted for Prop 64, they knew that cities and counties would ban these kinds of activities," adding, "Based on all the laws I've seen on this subject and my familiarity of Prop 64, it is likely going to go against the petitioner." Sindrich cited a 2014 case in which the California Supreme Court upheld Riverside County's local zoning ban on medical marijuana dispensaries. Also, the California Constitution spells out the authority of cities and counties to make and enforce local ordinances and regulations as long as they don't conflict with state law. Prop 64 allows households to grow up to 6 marijuana plants, but also allows local governments to reasonably regulate cultivation of non-medical marijuana for personal use by adults through zoning and other laws, such as banning outdoor growing. While use of medical marijuana has been allowed in California for over a decade, by an earlier proposition, and recreational marijuana became legal here after voters approved Proposition 64, all marijuana use and activities remain prohibited under federal law. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions recently decided to rescind the Obama administration's guidelines, which had instructed the Justice Department to take a hands-off approach in states that had legalized medical or recreational marijuana. Some cities fear that allowing marijuana businesses risks running afoul of federal law. marijuana ordinances vary widely among jurisdictions in San Diego County. The city of San Diego has a permissive ordinance that allows recreational and medical marijuana sales, commercial cultivation, and delivery. La Mesa and Lemon Grove voters have authorized sale of medical but not recreational marijuana. El Cajon and Santee have among the strictest rules banning all forms of marijuana sales, commercial cultivation, and delivery. The county has banned all new medical marijuana dispensaries and will sunset existing ones in 2020. Recreational marijuana sales, commercial cultivation, and deliveries are all illegal in unincorporated areas of the county. The court is expected to take up the motion against El Cajon in March. El Cajon City Attorney Morgan Foley says the city is vigorously opposing the petition. He concludes, "Our position is that none of the state's laws related to cannabis preempt our ban on marijuana dispensaries, that the California Supreme Court has confirmed this right of local control, and in fact, Proposition 64, by its own language, provides that local jurisdictions retain our land use rights to regulate and even ban such uses in our communities." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broaddus.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health report. The flu is taking a deadly toll locally. Last week, 32 people died of the flu in San Diego County, including a 10-year-old boy. So far this season, 206 flu deaths have been reported. The boy died on January 25th after being hospitalized with influenza AH3. He was not vaccinated for the flu and had underlying medical conditions. He is the second San Diego child to die with flu complications this season. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says, "The death of a child because of influenza is very unfortunate. Our condolences go out to the family for their tragic loss." The ages of this season's flu fatalities range from 1 to 101. Despite the additional deaths reported, new lab-confirmed cases and emergency room visits due to influenza-like illness decreased significantly last week. Although flu season here peaked in late December, Dr. Wooten warns, a second peak could occur. People still should continue to get vaccinated, since the flu season often lasts through the end of March, early April, or even later, she recommends. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get vaccinated. It takes 2 weeks for immunity to develop. Vaccinations are especially recommended for people over age 65 and their caregivers, pregnant women, and people with chronic medical conditions such as asthma, diabetes, and lung disease. Vaccines are available at doctor's offices and pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit sdiz.org or call 211. Doctors may prescribe antiviral medications to treat flu in the early stages. Health officials ask patients to send a family member or friend to pick up medications to avoid exposing others to the virus. Frequent hand washing, use of hand sanitizers, cleaning commonly touched surfaces, and staying home when you are sick are all recommended to avoid spreading the potentially deadly flu virus.
San Diego State University has a new president. The California State University Board of Trustees has appointed Adela De La Torre, who currently serves as Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs and Campus Diversity at the University of California, Davis. De La Torre becomes the 9th permanent president of San Diego State University and the first woman to serve in that role. She will join the campus in late June. Sally Roosh is currently serving as university president and was appointed to serve in that role on an interim basis after former president Elliot Hirschman accepted the position of president at Stevenson University in Maryland. De La Torre holds a Ph.D. in agricultural and resource economics from the University of California, Berkeley, where she also obtained a Bachelor of Science degree in political economy of natural resources. Before joining UC Davis, she served as director of the Mexican American Studies and Research Center at the University of Arizona. in the Management Fellows Program at California State University's Office of the Chancellor, as chair of the Chicano and Latino Studies Department at Long Beach State University, and as a professor of healthcare administration also at Long Beach State. Adam Day, chair of the SDSU Search Committee, says De La Torre is a skilled student success focused administrator, and most importantly, is a visionary leader. The new president could be overseeing a dramatic expansion of the university if voters approve a ballot measure to create a Western campus in Mission Valley, along with a new stadium, research facilities, and more. De La Torre says she is excited to join San Diego State, stating SDSU boasts a robust and dynamic variety of academic offerings taught by world-class faculty, as well as a commitment to serve a brilliant and diverse population of students. It is an incredibly prestigious university and a wonderful point of pride for San Diego, the new campus president adds. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broadus.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jean Carpenter with a Crime Beat report. In what she calls a wake-up call for men who buy sex, San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffens on Tuesday announced the arrest of 29 men following a three-week sting operation. Joined by the San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force, Steffens announced that Operation Reclaim and Rebuild is aimed at stopping the sexual exploitation of young women and girls and exposing the cycle of abuse caused by prostitution. A coalition of law enforcement agencies across Southern California participated in the operation, which included posting fake ads online offering sex for money. When the men showed up at the hotel expecting sex, instead they were greeted with handcuffs. The Johns arrested included men wearing wedding rings, active duty military personnel, and a sex abuse counselor at a local hospital who showed up wearing his medical scrubs. One man came on a bicycle in cycling gear with a backpack full of sexual props, and another left his dog in the car, which was towed by the officers. In addition to towing vehicles, authorities also seized cell phones as evidence. District Attorney Steffens says she hopes to raise awareness that when people pay for sex, the person on the other end of the transaction is often a victim who was forced into sex trafficking as a child. She says that the anonymity of the internet emboldens Johns to demand extreme acts and to believe that they won't be held accountable. The DA adds, they are often more violent than the pimps and traffickers themselves. A university study recently showed that the underground sex industry in the San Diego region alone is roughly an $810 million business each year. This was the fourth year of Operation Reclaim and Rebuild, which this time included support from law enforcement across San Diego County as well as statewide. California Attorney General Javier Becerra praised San Diego's Human Trafficking Task Force for their actions, adding, "Together we sent a loud and clear message. Criminals who prey on young women and children will be swiftly brought to justice."
The Super Bowl is on Sunday, and local and state law enforcement agencies are passing on this message: fans don't let fans drive drunk. The California Office of Traffic Safety, California Highway Patrol, San Diego Sheriff, and local police departments are huddling up for a special designated driver reminder telling football fans not to drop the ball. Impaired driving near or above the 0.08 blood alcohol limit can be deadly. Even small amounts of alcohol can impair judgment to make driving unsafe. In 2016, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reported there were over 10,000 fatalities in motor vehicle traffic crashes involving drunk drivers nationwide. In California, over 1,000 deaths occurred from impaired driving. Driving under the influence, or DUI, doesn't just mean booze. Recreational drugs, including prescription medications, endanger others on the road. Kevin Maxwell with the El Cajon Police Department reminds fans to have a game plan for the night so friends and family know who the designated driver is. That means turning over car keys to a sober driver before the game begins. If you don't have a friend who can be your designated driver, order a sober ride home from ride-sharing services such as Uber, Lyft, or Curb. So this Super Bowl weekend, don't fumble. Be a team player and help keep impaired drivers from getting behind the wheel. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fastier with a Green Scene Report. You might be surprised to learn where the highest levels of ozone pollution are in San Diego County. Hint, it's not urban areas in local cities, but rather communities in East County's mountains and desert areas. According to a new map from the California Environmental Protection Agency, the highest local ozone level is in Alpine at 0.057 parts per million, followed by Borrego Springs and Warner Springs at 0.055 parts per million. That data is for average 8-hour maximums in 2012 and 2013, according to information provided by the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. Those levels slightly exceed the maximum ozone level of 0.05 parts per million per day, advised for people doing heavy work, but is below the 0.01 parts per million level per day for people doing light work. For everyone, ozone levels should never exceed 0.1 parts per million for 8 hours of exposure daily, according to OSHA. Ozone, the main component in smog, can cause lung irritation and inflammation. Even low levels can worsen certain chronic health conditions, such as asthma. Ozone levels are usually worse in hot weather and during the afternoons. Pollutions from vehicles, farms, or factories that react in sunlight to form ozone. Ozone also contributes to the greenhouse gas effect, exacerbating climate change.
Citizens Oversight, an El Cajon-based citizens watchdog group also operating as Coalition to Decommission San Onofre, has signed a settlement agreement with other ratepayer advocates, Southern California Edison, and San Diego Gas and Electric, to end a dispute over how much money ratepayers are obligated to pay for the San Onofre nuclear power plant. The facility was closed due to an emergency shutdown in 2012 and was permanently shut down in 2013. If the California Public Utilities Commission approves the settlement deal, your utility bills will no longer include payments for the failed San Onofre plant, effective retroactively to December 19, 2017. An earlier $3.3 billion settlement in 2014 had agreed that ratepayers would continue payments until 2020. The new settlement will save ratepayers about $873 million. Any amounts collected after December 19th and before the Public Utilities Commission approval will be refunded to ratepayers. Raymond Lutz, founder of Citizens Oversight, says, "Paying for a closed power plant makes no sense," adding, "Putting an end to the dispute is beneficial so we can concentrate on the transition to renewable energy sources." The 2014 settlement was thrown into question due to the revelation that former Public Utilities Commission President Michael Peavy had met improperly with Edison executive Stephen Pickett at the Hotel Bristol in Warsaw, Poland in early 2013 and developed a proposed term sheet which closely matched the structure of the terms in the 2014 settlement agreement. This handwritten term sheet was discovered in Peavy's top desk drawer when his residence was searched during an investigation into the deadly 2010 San Bruno gas explosion. Lutz called finding the term sheet a lucky break, adding, "Without the fortuitous discovery of the RSG note, it likely would not have been possible to achieve this win for the ratepayers." A court has previously held that the failure of steam generators at San Onofre were due to a design flaw, not the fault of Edison or its contractors. The four massive generators that were supposed to last for at least 40 years had such intense vibrations that they had to be shut down after just 11 months. Lutz says there's an important safety lesson to be learned. The radioactive leak that prompted the shutdown was growing at 40% an hour, and without that systematic shutdown, it could have been a much larger disaster, he observes, adding, "This nuclear plant did not shut down due to any external event like the earthquake and tsunami of Fukushima. It did not shut down due to operator error, such as occurred at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. This plant shut down due to design mistakes that were not detected by traditional engineering and management techniques, nor detected by Nuclear Regulatory Commission review. We must learn that even the best engineering practices and prudent management nevertheless may fail." But Lutz adds, "The consequences of nuclear plant failure is so high that design failure is not an option." He wants to see construction of nuclear power plants halted and existing plants ultimately decommissioned to be replaced with renewable energy solutions that are both safer and cheaper. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Mandy Matty. She is a managing volunteer with No One Left Behind, which is an organization that helps interpreters from Iraq and Afghanistan who are resettling in the United States after the very dangerous work they've done over there helping the U.S. military. Mandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Miriam.
Now, what drew our attention today, in addition to talking about the organization, we want to lead off by talking about one particular interpreter and his family right here in East County in El Cajon that needs some help. Can you tell us what happened?
We have a family that we recently resettled in El Cajon about 6 months ago. They arrived from Afghanistan. He helped the organization USAID in Afghanistan as an interpreter. And we got them resettled here and on their feet. And then they suffered a tragic apartment fire last week and lost everything.
That's awful. The family is Ahmed Shurish and his wife, and they have three children. Now, how old are the kids?
They have an 8-year-old boy, a 6-year-old girl, and a 4-year-old girl.
Wow. And so they need absolutely everything. Now, the fire started in their upstairs neighbor's apartment, and Ahmed actually ran into the flames to save his neighbor's baby upstairs. And then when the sprinklers came on, it ruined everything in his own family's apartment between the fire and the water. They lost everything. What can people do if they want to help this family?
If people would like to donate, they can find our public Facebook page, the No One Left Behind San Diego chapter on Facebook, or they can go to noonelef.org and they can donate that way.
Okay, and there's also a GoFundMe account that's been set up for the Shurish family. That's spelled S-H-U-R-I-S-H. Or you can go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org, and we have a story up about it in our People Power section with all of these links if you didn't catch them on the air. So let's talk a little bit more about No One Left Behind, what the organization is all about and what it does.
No One Left Behind is a national organization that was started several years ago to help combat interpreters and other locals in Iraq and Afghanistan that have helped U.S. forces and U.S. companies help them immigrate here to the U.S. because after they've helped us over there, they're often then put on death lists by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda for helping us. So we try to bring them here to safety. We've had folks here that we've resettled whose children have been kidnapped by the Taliban,
oh my goodness,
who have had had brothers and family members murdered simply because they worked for U.S. forces.
Wow. So it's really important to help take care of these good people who've helped take care of our military and help protect our soldiers over there.
It is. It really is a matter of national security, because if we leave these folks behind literally to die, the next time we're in a foreign zone and we need help from the locals, they're going to look at how we treated the last people that helped us.
Right. You were a soldier yourself.
I was. I served in Iraq in 2005.
There you go. And I understand that you helped one of the soldiers in a very personal way.
I did. I actually fell in love and married my Iraqi translator over there.
Amazing. And you can read about that. She has a book out about it, by the way. We've interviewed you before on the show. And the name of that book is?
My book is A Foreign Affair, that tells the story of my deployment to Iraq and how I met and fell in love with my husband.
Very good. I understand that you have a new book coming out that is all about interpreters. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, the new book is Voicing the Eagle, and it is already out. It's now available on Amazon, and it tells my husband's story of being a local Iraqi who was recruited right off the streets by a U.S. Army officer to come and help translate.
Very good. How many translators have been resettled right here in San Diego County, do you know?
We have had a little over 1,000, I believe, that have come here on SI visas, not just interpreters, but anybody that worked for U.S. forces in any capacity in Iraq or Afghanistan qualifies for this special immigrant visa.
Well, we certainly want to help support all of these folks that supported our troops. Back to the family that lost everything in the fire. If people can't afford a financial donation, but they maybe have items to donate, what items does this family most need right now?
Any household good or necessity, basic necessity, toiletries, dishes, linens, towels, clothing, shoes, those items are all so helpful for this family as well as other families that we have.
Yeah, I can't imagine how devastating that must be to resettle out of a war zone, fleeing with your life at stake, coming here with probably very little, restarting, getting an apartment, finally getting back on your feet again, only to have a fire that destroyed absolutely everything. Do we know what caused the fire?
We do not know what caused the fire yet. It is still under investigation, but it actually started in the apartment above theirs.
Oh,
but of
goodness.
Course, it engaged the sprinkler system, so then that ruined everything.
Oh, how awful for them. Well, it's wonderful, Mandy, that you are helping, that no one left behind. The organization you're involved with is working to help not only this family, but so many other interpreter families that have helped our troops. And again, if people want to get more information, you can go to the website
noonelef.org.
Okay, and you can designate a donation for the Shurish family, the fire family. Mandy, I'm going to let you have the final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know, either about your efforts to help the Shurish family or about the No One Left Behind organization?
These folks that we're resettling really are heroes for our country. They have stood shoulder to shoulder with our military on the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan, and they have bled for our causes. And the least we can do, at least in my opinion, is help them resettle and find safety here.
Very good. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Mandy Matty, who is a volunteer manager with No One Left Behind, helping these interpreters that are relocating over here who helped our troops, and also right now specifically helping the Ahmed Shurish family that's lost everything in a fire here in El Cajon. Mandy, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region. Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And I'm Meridian Broaddus, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes Mean Mary in concert in Santee, a powwow at Cuyamaca College, Hawk Watch in Ramona, the Oak Ridge Boys at Sequan, Inside the Actors Process at the Stage House Theater, and a violin and cello concert at Mission Trails Regional Park.
Plus, we'll have coming attractions, including Cupid and Canines at Grossmont Center, a chamber music concert at the La Mesa Library, open farm day at the Oasis Camel Dairy, a Valentine's dinner in Julian, gardening tips and tours, live music at local night spots, the Martin Luther King Choir's ensemble in Lemon Grove, a star party, Susico the Musical in Spring Valley, and a St. Patrick's Day half marathon run through El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Wildlife Research Institute invites you to Hawk Watch. Each Saturday in February at 10 a.m., visitors can see birds of prey such as hawks, eagles, and owls. Sponsored by the Wildlife Research Institute, this year Hawk Watch will be held at Beegit Ranch, a private ranch open only for the Hawk Watch events. Guests are advised to arrive a half hour early for parking, bring binoculars, and enjoy coffee and donuts before viewing the raptors that make their homes in the Ramona grasslands. For more information, you can visit wildlife-research.org.
Riviera Supper Club in La Mesa has live bands on stage in the Turquoise Room most nights throughout February and March. Upcoming Saturday night headliners include Baja Bugs, Ron and the Reapers, Gino and the Lone Gunman, Black Market 111, Shark Jones, and Vinyl Pirates. For a full list of entertainment, visit RivieraSupperClub.com.
Mean Mary will be live in concert on February 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Summit Universalist Unitarian Fellowship in Santee. The artist is an Americana, bluegrass, blues, and folk artist based in Nashville, stopping here on her blazing tour through Southern California. Mary read music before she could read words and was proficient on guitar, banjo, and fiddle by age 7, according to a bio provided by Summit. She is known for her lightning-fast fingers, haunting vocals, and intricate story songs. For more information, visit summituf.org.
The Native American Student Alliance at Cuyamaca College is hosting its fourth annual powwow on February 3rd from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. in front of the Communication Arts Complex. The powwow aims to promote Native American heritage with activities including Native dances, bird singing, drums, arts and crafts vendors, and foods. Cuyamaca is an adaptation of a Kumeyaay phrase, a Cuyamac, which writers have translated to mean behind the clouds, above rain, and the place where the rain comes from heavens. No matter the translation, Cuyamaca College's ties to the Native American community and culture are strong, with its location on once indigenous land and its close proximity to many reservations. For directions to Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon, visit cuyamaca.edu.
Grossmont College's Theater Arts Department will kick off its spring season with its 12th annual Inside the Actors Process production, this time focusing on classical theater. Directed by Benjamin Cole, Inside the Actors Process Classical will be offered to the public at the Stage House Theater on February 2nd and 3rd at 7:30 p.m., plus a matinee performance at 2 p.m. on February 3rd. The play, which provides audiences a peek at the actors' process of discovering their characters, features Grossmont College Theater Arts students performing vignettes of classics penned by Molière, Ibsen, Chekhov, Shakespeare, and Oliver Goldsmith in today's modern language. For tickets, visit the Grossmont College Theater Arts Department at grossmont.edu.
The Oak Ridge Boys, who were recently inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame, will perform on Saturday, February 3rd at 5 p.m. in Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. They've won many awards, including a Grammy, Country Music Association, and American Country Music Awards, and they're still going strong after more than 40 years. For tickets, visit saquon.com.
A violin and cello concert will be presented by Paviki Nykter and Cecilia Kim at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, February 4th at 3 p.m. The complimentary concert will be held in the Visitor Center. For directions and details, visit mtrp.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Grossmont Center Shopping Mall in La Mesa invites you to Cupid and Canines on February 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The San Diego Animal Support Foundation and Grossmont Center are bringing together dozens of rescue groups and shelters, featuring hundreds of adoptable dogs and even some cats for this mega adoption event inside the mall. Find purebred breeds from Chihuahuas to Great Pyrenees, as well as All-American Mutts. Just in time for Valentine's Day, you can find your new best friend or the perfect family pet. For more information, visit grossmontcenter.com.
Bruce and Beverly Dorsey with the San Diego Chamber Music Society will perform a concert with piano and horn at the La Mesa Library on February 10th at 1 p.m. The La Mesa Library hosts free concerts on the second Saturday each month, thanks to support from Friends of La Mesa Library.
You're invited to bring the family to Open Farm Day at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona on February 10th and 11th from 1 to 4 p.m. with a live animal show at 1:30 p.m. The show features talking parrots, galloping, gobbling turkeys, dedicated farm dogs, and the biggest stars, camels. You can also feed treats to camels, cuddle with camels, shop for camels' milk, soaps, and lotions, take crazy camel selfies, or ride a camel. For details, visit CamelDairy.com.
Jeremy's on the Hill in the Julian area will be serving up four-course Valentine's dinners paired with local wines on February 10th through the 14th. This romantic feast begins with ceviche and your choice of lobster bisque or a salad topped with ripe fruits, followed by a choice of salmon, duck, or steak entrees. This meal concludes with a Bananas Foster vanilla layer cake with chocolate espresso sauce and chai tea whipped cream. If you come on the 10th, 11th, or 12th, you can also enjoy live music, classical guitar, piano, and acoustic guitar, respectfully. For all the delicious details, or to make a reservation for you and your Valentine, you can visit bestrestaurantinjulian.com.
On February 17th, the Water Conservation Garden invites you to a Valentine's tour titled Love for Sex in the Garden. Think humans work hard at finding a partner? You'll be astounded at the creativity, deceit, competitiveness, and even murder that plants attempt to achieve pollination. Bring your sweetheart and celebrate nature's creativity with tour guide Rosalie Dosick, the self-described Dr. Ruth of the plant world, plus chocolate for all who attend. This PG-rated tour is based on the book Sex in the Garden. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village will host live music by Stage 4, Jazz on February 17th at 7 p.m. Stage 4 is a dynamic group with a repertoire that spans jazz, rhythm, blues, and more. For details, visit sanpasqualewinery.com.
The Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir of San Diego's Ensemble will be performing gospel and inspirational songs at the Lemon Grove Library on Saturday, February 17th at 2 p.m. The Lemon Grove Library is located at 3001 School Lane in Lemon Grove. The ensemble's music celebrates the history of Negro spirituals, aspiring to be inspirational and uplifting. For more information, you can visit the musical group's website at mlkccsd.org.
View the Andromeda Galaxy, the Orion Nebula, and other celestial sights during a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday, February 17th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Amateur astronomer and trail guide George Varga will have a telescope available for viewing the night sky at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot. Learn more at www.mtrp.org.
Learn tips for attracting pollinators such as bees, hummingbirds, and butterflies to your garden at La Mesa Beautiful's annual meeting on February 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Nancoots Cottage near the La Mesa Recreation Center. Marcia Van Loy, a volunteer with the Master Gardener Association for 17 years, will be the speaker. Growing plants for all types of pollinators in her hillside garden is one of Loy's favorite subjects to share with others. Her garden is a certified wildlife habitat, a certified earth-friendly garden, and was featured in the San Diego Home and Garden magazine. And, after many years of collecting rustic birdhouses, she now teaches master gardeners how to build them to raise funds for their educational programs. RSVPs are requested at lamesabeautiful@gmail.com.
Young Actors Theater will present Susico the Musical at the Encore Theater in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley from February 22nd through March 4th. This musical production brings to life your favorite Dr. Seuss characters, from the Cat in the Hat to Horton the Elephant. For tickets, visit yatsandiego.org or call 619-670-1627.
Run East County invites you to take part in the annual St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon, 5K Race, and Green Mile through downtown El Cajon on Sunday, March 4th. There's also a Tribes and Clans CrossFit competition, a Tribes and Clans for Kids event, and a beer garden. Participants are encouraged to wear green and participate in a costume contest as you join avid runners and walkers for a morning of fun, all to benefit local East County charities. To register for the St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon race or other events, you can visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is John Fistier with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. If you need help to prepare your income taxes, the county is again teaming up with local partners to offer free income tax preparation for low-income families and individuals. The free tax preparation is available now through April 16th at dozens of locations throughout the county. The annual free tax preparation services are part of the annual Earned Income Tax Credit campaign, which began in 2003 and is conducted by local nonprofit organizations located throughout the region. The campaign helps residents claim their Earned Income Tax Credit, the federal government's largest assistance program for low to moderate income families. The IRS estimates that each year, 20 to 25% of eligible people don't claim this credit. The local program is supported by the County Health and Human Service Agency's Community Action Partnership, the IRS, the AARP, United Way, and 211 San Diego. Supervisor Greg Cox says, "We want people to claim their earned income tax credit and to keep more of their hard-earned money, money that could be spent here and support a local economy. As a part of the campaign, you can have your taxes prepared for you, prepare them yourself with assistance from a volunteer, or do them on your own by visiting myfreetaxes.com. To receive free services, just call 211. The free tax preparation campaign aims to get people out of poverty and help them thrive, a goal of the county's Live Well San Diego vision. Individuals and families who worked last year and earned less than $53,505 could qualify for as much as $6,318 in federal earned income tax credit. In addition, the California state credit could range from $223 up to $2,775. Residents must file a tax return to be eligible for both credits. Last year, San Diego area volunteers filed over 31,000 federal and state tax returns, bringing in $35.6 million in refunds to local working families and individuals. About $15 million of the refund amount was earned income tax credit dollars. Again, to receive free help to file your taxes if you qualify for the earned income tax credit, Just call 211 to make an appointment at a location in your community.
Treating wildlife burned in wildfires has always been a daunting task. Long recovery times, frequent bandage changes, and administering of medications while recuperating can result in becoming too acclimated to humans, preventing animals from being released back into the wild. But now, veterinarians from the University of California, Davis, have made a major breakthrough. After two black bears burned during the Thomas Fire in Southern California were brought to California Department of Fish and Wildlife Facility near Sacramento. Both had severely burned paws, and the team had trouble getting the bears to take pain medication. Then they learned that one of the female bears was pregnant, so waiting months for her to recover enough to walk wasn't an option. Jamie Payton is chief of integrative medicine service at the UC Davis Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital, where she helps with pain management. Dr. Payton says, "When I saw the degree of injury that she had and how much pain she was in, as a veterinarian, it just tugs at your heart. There was a risk that the mother bear might reject her cub, or that both would have to spend the rest of their lives in captivity." Then Peyton remembered reading about doctors in Brazil who use sterilized skins from tilapia fish to successfully treat burns on humans. This had never been done in the U.S. and never tried on animals anywhere, but she decided it was worth trying. The high level of collagen in the fish skins speeds up healing and protects the wounds. The tilapia skins are also inexpensive and easily available. After sterilizing tilapia skins in the lab, the UC Davis team performed surgery to suture the fish skins onto the bear's paws. Before the procedure, the bears could not stand or walk. They could only sit up with their paws off of the ground. As soon as the first bear awoke after the procedure, she stood up and soon became mobile again. The bears also received therapies including acupuncture, chiropractic care, electrical nerve stimulation, and cold laser therapy to help control pain and enhance wound healing. The team also worked with UC Davis veterinary pharmacists to create a new burn salve to help ease the bear's pain. While Peyton believes all these therapies helped the bears heal, the biggest chance came after the tilapia skins were applied. In just a few weeks, new skin had grown back on the bear paws pad. They later applied the fish skins to a mountain lion with burned paws, and after the wounds healed, the lion ate the tilapia skins. Fortunately, both bears and the mountain lion are doing very well on their roads to recovery, though their wounds are not yet 100% healed. On January 18th, the two bears were released back into the wild. Since their original habitat was destroyed by the fire, state fish and wildlife officers used logs and dirt to create two winter dens for the bears in the Los Padres National Forest. Satellite collars will help state wildlife officers track the bears' movement, and Dr. Payton says she is praying that both bears will survive over the long term in the wild. Their treatment holds potential for use not only on wildlife in the United States, but also on pets, livestock, and humans. Tilapia skins also offer hope for burn victims in other countries, where patients may not have access to skin banks. Dr. Payton concludes, "One animal can change the face of medicine," adding, "I think these bears and the mountain lion are inspiring us to think outside the box. These individual animals have contributed to promoting how we're going to treat burns in the future." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.